Hello and welcome to a special coronavirus episode of the Wednesday Conversation. Hey, listeners. This is Bob Thune, and I'm here with Mike Kresnick of Coramdale Church, taking over his intro bit at this exact moment. Chris Hemelman of First City Church and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church. And every Wednesday, or in this case, Tuesday late afternoon, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. We're obviously recording a special episode in light of the madness that we're in right now. We felt like, man, coronavirus thing is changing every day. We usually try to think about and record these podcasts a little bit early. And it's just one of those moments where we felt like, man, we need to come into the studio and record a special podcast and just try to speak to the moment a little bit. We know that all of you are sitting at home, working from home, and or schooling your kids at home. And you're looking for good content on your podcasts anyway. You're looking for something to listen to. So here we are. Welcome, America.
Greetings.
It's probably good that we're all using the same microphones, too.
Yeah.
Right? As we usually do.
We're practicing social distancing at this part.
I'm definitely right now, yeah.
not within an arm's length of anyone here.
Nope.
So as far as I know, we're safe. And there are less than 10 of us in the room. Hey, I want to ask you all first off, what are you feeling? What are you sensing in this moment? And then what are you sensing from the people around you in this moment? So how are you and how are the people around you?
I'm doing well. There's probably, if I look back a week ago, I was pretty cynical that we were just overreacting, and sitting here in Omaha, Nebraska a week later, it's like, oh, there might be some overreaction just to curb people getting sick and the spread of the virus and everything. But I'm just kind of humbled in a sense of just like, okay, this is real. People are getting sick, and this is impacting our lives in a lot of ways. And feeling that unique way, like my kids are home from school. We do a homeschool hybrid, but having them home extra days is real. And it's cold outside, so they can't go outside and play. So like cabin fever is being intensified. And my wife gets the brunt of that. But I feel like when I've talked to others, they're kind of just done talking about it. Like they kind of want some normalcy in their lives and to talk about other things other than the coronavirus and so it's kind of where I'm at too. Is just what normal things can we do and
just
talk about
Tom Brady? That's what we want to talk about.
That's right.
Is why is Tom Brady still playing football?
Coronavirus podcast.
Call it a career,
it's about
man.
Tom Brady now.
Call it a career. You did it all. Just move on. That's Chris, all I'm going to say.
Chris's week, Chris's corona week has gotten thwarted by Brady's issues.
Yeah.
Maybe he did it on purpose.
Maybe he did. I believe that it is a conspiracy by ESPN to have something,
to, have something
to talk
to report
about.
On. Yeah, yes, that's true.
Because no one's playing sports. So they paid him a lot of money to just
totally true.
Not play for the Patriots. That's my conspiracy theory.
There you go.
Love it.
Send your thoughts to podcast at CDMahana.
There you go. Bring
We're
your conspiracy
hear from all
theories.
The Boston people. Be yes. like, oh, we'll talk about the Patriots right now.
Yeah, and Boston people, hey, you had a good run. Just get used to the new normal.
Get used to
it's
not
the new
being
normal,
great.
People. For me, it's been weird because in some ways, just mentally, emotionally, just the energy I'm feeling right now reminds me of 4 years ago when we first planted First City. Hmm. And that's trying to build systems and think about ways to disciple and communicate with people in some ways without any infrastructure. Because here's the thing that's been really hard for me. I borderline detest social media and
Amen.
Some aspects of social technology.
Amen.
And so now that's what we're having to lean into for discipleship. So I'm having to think about using tools that I don't like, and that's been pretty hard for me. But at the same time, have enjoyed sort of the problem-solving aspect of this, of like, okay, I need to get creative, need to take a step back, think about how to disciple people well, and we have some great people on staff that are helping me think through those and probably think about this better than even that I am. So there's both an energy of problem-solving, but then there's also this sense of, man, do I really have to use this? Do I really have to live stream? Do we really have to use Zoom? I even told our people, hey, you can use Marco Polo, which I think is an app from the pit of hell. But hey, if it's going to keep you connected in your self-quarantine, then please, by all means, use Marco Polo. But once coronavirus is done, just delete it off your phone and send it back to the pit of hell.
Have you put Marco Polo on your own phone yet?
No, nope, nope. I'm holding out. I am starting to create Zoom accounts for different groups that I'm meeting with, and we're going to try to use Zoom and see if that works.
That's great. So basically, you know, we need to check back with you in a week to see if Zoom is better than Marco Polo or how these apps are all going to go.
We'll just podcast on Zoom next week.
There you go. There you go.
For me, it's been interesting because my wife has some compromised health, and she has for the last couple of years. And so as a husband and as a dad, especially over my teenagers who want to run around and be with friends and go here and there, it's been interesting because I've had to think about it from her health perspective. So I'm kind of seeing it through the lens of we have experientially and firsthand some stuff in our house that we are like, man, the last thing I want is for my wife to have to fight this thing, right? So we've we've had her hunkered down for a while, probably last week or so, not really out of anxiety, but more just out of wisdom and precaution. And so that lens has happened. I've been feeling that personally. And then, but like pastorally, I feel a bunch of other things. I feel like there's two different hats. But this is probably kind of what I'm sensing and feeling. I talked to a guy today, actually, Chris, in your church, and he was saying, I feel like everything all in one day. Sometimes I'm like, this is crazy. We're overreacting. Then I feel like, oh, maybe I should freak out a little bit. And then I feel like I don't really care. And he feels all that in the course of one day. I think that's kind of where everybody's at right now. Bob, you mentioned one time in something that this week particular is kind of like the snow day. Where we're all kind of, we can handle a snow day.
Yeah, this past Sunday was like, oh, snow day.
And then the thing I'm thinking probably more pastorally about is a week from now, 2 weeks from now, and stuff like that. For instance, I just remember my wife and I went to Paris to teach English. This was in 2001, a long time ago. And the missionary looked me in the eye there, and we were talking about culture, and he said, the French know how to live, and America knows how to survive. And the thing that I sense right now is that America is like, well, we're not sure if we do know how to survive. And we've been basically purporting like we definitely do. But I think people are feeling that in their day-to-day work.
I was great when it was like, hey, gatherings need to be 50 people or less. Then when yesterday they basically said, hey, no gatherings of 10 people or more for the next 2 weeks, and that means bars and restaurants and all kinds of businesses, gyms, you know, just like any place where there's 40 or 50 or 60 people. That was sort of a gut punch for me because it just felt like, well, that changes what we were even planning to be able to do as a church. We thought our gospel communities could continue to gather. Now they're going to have to shut down for a couple of weeks probably, or figure out ways to get smaller. And it also felt like, dude, that hurts for people in our city, you know, who are going to like not be working. And businesses that are going to lose a lot of revenue. And so I felt myself like really discouraged last night. I was like, that just sucks. Mm-hmm. And I realize it's necessary. And, you know, like I think there are good reasons for it. But I think I felt that. Also, yesterday is St. Patrick's Day, or today is St. Patrick's Day. And we were supposed to, today that we're recording this, yesterday when you're listening to this, Tuesday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. We usually have a big St. Patrick's Day party as a staff team, which is one of my favorite things that we do, and now we can't have it. And so I'm like, well, that is a bummer. And I usually really look forward to that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling that a little bit. Feeling a lot of things from people around us, you know? Mm-hmm. And I told Dusty the other day, I kind of wish I was just still on sabbatical. Because then I wouldn't even have to think about any of this. Like, you guys figure it out. I don't know.
This would be a great time
to be on sabbatical because I could basically just self-quarantine, which is what I did for my sabbatical anyway. Yeah. Just like hang out in quiet places by myself.
You guys can deal with this.
Yeah, you guys figure out what we're doing. So I think Mike's breaking things in the studio at this exact moment. Things are falling. Coronavirus is destroying everything.
We're going to be fine.
I think I feel it's so funny to me. Funny is not even the right word. It was a rough weekend for me as a pastor. Mm-hmm. Not even because of all the sort of contingencies we had to plan for, but just because like the response was so varied among our people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I got a lot of emails and texts, and I realized everybody who emailed me or texted me assumed that no one else was going to email me or text me the thing they had an opinion on. And so I was like, actually, what you guys don't realize is I got dozens of those between Thursday night and Saturday night. And everybody felt it was important to let me know what they thought we should do as a church. And I'm like, and I actually like all those people's opinions. There's not a single person. I was like, why is this person bothering to email me? It's just like, yeah, three people have already said that, and four people have already said that, and someone's already sent me that link. And yes, I've seen that article. It's just, you know, just like, I love y'all, but that gets overwhelming as a pastor. And so I was really feeling that going into Saturday night. I was just like, I don't know what to do. I feel like overloaded with like everybody's information and a lot of people's anxieties. And, you know, I think it's just good for people to know like, hey, that's normal life for your pastor on in a moment like this. You know, take that for what it is. It's probably helpful to know that, you know, lots of that gets surfaced in a church body of a few hundred people, you know, in a moment like this. And, so sometimes that can be kind of overwhelming, and I don't know if I'd call it discouraging, but just kind of like, I don't know what to do with all of that sometimes, you know?
Yeah. The information overload. I know for me too, trying to fight my natural impulse, you know, you may tend towards fear. You may tend towards like, hey, skepticism and, wanting to make a wise decision, not based just off kind of my natural default, but let me gather all the information, make a wise decision. And at some point it just felt like overwhelming, partly because there's a lot of information, partly because things kept changing so quickly.
Yeah.
I know that the weekend, we were going from having to scramble to find a new location because the school shut down to setting that up and kind of figuring how we're going to do that to then just making a decision to cancel altogether. And then, hey, should we have a prayer meeting? You know, so it just was rapidly moving, over the course of several days. And after a while, you're just like, decision fatigue sets in, and you're just like, I'm just done. I don't know.
Watch whatever you want.
Listen to some podcasts and watch some videos because I'm taking a nap.
Yeah. So you have all the logistics of your gathering maybe taking place, and then it's not taking place. And then that doesn't even allow you to even tap into like what people are feeling and how to shepherd people.
That's a good point, Dusty. It really did feel like just kind of problem solve logistics for a while.
Yeah.
But now kind of feeling like, okay, it looks like this is going to be our new normal. We're still, like I said, we're still definitely problem solving and working through some things, but getting to a place now where we can start focusing a little bit more now. Okay. What does it look like to pastor people? Because people sin and people's issues aren't just going to, you know, hit pause during the coronavirus, that it's still real life going on. And so how am I going to engage those people well and, continue to be present, even though I'm supposed to social distance. But you know, I think the aspect of this too, that I'm trying to lean into is just the truth that, you know, God is still sovereign. This is not thrown him. This is not, confounding him. He is good and he's at work even through these other means of ministry and discipleship and communication. So the more that I find myself holding on to that, I feel like the more settled that I'm becoming.
I had a doctor email me and say, shut everything down now. What are we doing? And I had another doctor email and be like, hey, we're going to be fine. Just keep, you know, like even the medical community has very widely divergent reactions and responses. I have a friend I'm in touch with almost daily who is an infectious disease specialist, in the federal government and works on this stuff. This is like his world. Is like, he geeks out right now. He's like, this is what I've trained for, is this kind of thing.
This is my whole life.
And he points out, which is really good to remember. He's like, hey, you have to remember what we're doing here is responding to mathematical modeling. There's no actual outbreak that's destroying everything yet. What we're trying to do is predict what could happen based on modeling from what is happening. And that's like, there are really good people that give their lives to that. Mm-hmm. And so that's for the people who are skeptical and are like, are we overreacting? The answer is, well, maybe, but the problem is maybe not, right? Like we want to have the most conservative reaction in a moment like this to actually protect us against what could be a worst case scenario. Mm. You'd rather plan for what could happen and be ahead of the curve than not plan for what could happen and be behind the curve. And that's kind of where we're at as a society right now. So it does feel to me like, I don't know, are all the measures we're taking necessary? Maybe, maybe not. But the wisdom of it is, hey, we have to take seriously what could happen if we don't take some serious measures. And the other thing he points out about this virus is, keep in mind, it's new. There are no vaccines for it yet. nor is there really a good understanding of how it spreads yet. So there's just a lot of unknowns. Whereas with other viruses in the past, it's like we kind of have a little better handle on what this is going to look like and how we treat it. This you're dealing with, we can't even test people well enough yet. Mm. And so there's just a lot of unknowns that if the medical community feels like, and the public health community feels like we're freaking out a little bit, it's probably because there are good reasons to do that in this moment, because when you have a virus that spreads quickly, that we don't have a vaccine for, that we can't test very well, and that we just started clinical trials on vaccines on, and, you know, there's a lot of factors in play here that we need to treat seriously. And mm-hmm. that's helpful for me to keep in mind when I feel like, well, how come I can't have people over for dinner again? Oh, mm-hmm. okay. You know?
Yep.
Yeah, switch the flip for me was recognizing, hey, these calculated overreactions now are meant to mitigate and slow down the virus so that we're not in this situation 5-6 months from now. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, okay, if we do all that we can now, mm-hmm. the hope is by the summer, we're mm-hmm. starting to maybe get back to somewhat normal rhythms. And so I was thinking, okay, I can be on board for that, because I don't want to live like this for a long time.
It's like a virus sabbatical.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just 2 to 3 months.
There you go.
Yeah.
A global
virus sabbatical. Yes, yes. So I'm with you, Bob. I think recognizing that there are dynamics at play here that are different than you know, when you had like the swine flu or SARS or, you know, the different sort of outbreaks that we've had over the past decade, that we need to be willing to adjust life for the foreseeable future.
I will also say, and I said this in a video I filmed today for our church, we do have to be careful about misinformation in a moment like this. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of stupidity flying around on social mm-hmm. media. And the challenge of it is it's not like stupidity, like some random college student sharing their opinion. It's like people sharing real research studies and saying, based on this study, here's what's probably going to happen. And it's like very, very worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. Or even people that have credible letters behind their name sharing unverified things, you know, that haven't been vetted. And so there's just a lot of that happening right now because people are very nervous. And it's sort of like, hey, give me someone who has a realistic take mm-hmm. on this. And so if there's someone who's an MD who's telling me, oh, it's worse than you think it is, I'm going to give that some weight because that mm-hmm. person's a doctor. They know somehow what I don't know. And so I do think it's really wise to say, like, hey, as Christians, we really got to make sure that we're, number one, limiting our intake of information. And number two, trying to listen mm-hmm. to really credible and verifiable sources. And also to try to, I think of Psalm 131 in these moments, right? Like my soul is weaned, or like is quieted like a weaned child within mm-hmm. me. This sense of like, I need to not occupy myself with things that are too big for me. Mm. It's someone else's job to figure out how fast this virus could spread and what is the worst case scenario. It's not my job to take that information in and do things in my mind with that. My job is to follow the protocols of like yep. the things I need yep. to do in my local community to keep that from happening. And you know, that's just there's so much data out there and so much information. I saw a guy last night who doesn't even live in America, someone I follow on Twitter from Australia, who's sharing like, here's a study done in the UK and it shows that 1 million people are going to die in the US. And we've already lost our opportunity to stop that from happening. It's going to happen. I'm just like, actually, no one I know that's a credible source is saying that that's going to happen. And that study exists as part of what built the models to say, here's why we need to act now. Because in a worst case scenario where we don't act quickly, things like that could happen, mm-hmm. you know? So it just feels like this is like the beauty of access to information is there's a lot of stuff you can access. The downside of that in a moment like this is people are going and reading mm-hmm. random research studies that they would never care about to try to figure out what's going to happen and how do I get ready for it and all that. So I think as Christians, there's a wisdom component here of like trying to filter our information well and limit its flow.
Yeah. Know your limitations of what you can understand.
Yeah.
That's a good word. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that, Bob, what you just described there is exactly what people need to really understand and become self-aware of. Chris, like what you're saying just now, like in order to gain victory over what I'm feeling, number one, I got to first know what I'm feeling, which is confusion, chaos. This person thinks that person thinks this. And then I have to go, okay, I have to figure out how to differentiate right now and realize I actually don't have the capacity to take in the next article and the next this and the next that, and I can't watch that and I can't watch this. I have to, I think Christians have to realize, and anybody has to realize, here's my capacity, here's my bandwidth, and live within that. And I realize that, Chris, we were talking before we even turned on the mics, that's probably where I was at last night, was just a little bit of information overload and processing just, or well, I didn't even realize I was processing it. I actually wasn't processing it probably well. I was just reading the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and then going to bed, you know? Mm. We have one guy that we know who, he and his wife, they're not paying attention to any media. They're not paying attention to anything out there, air quotes around out there. And they're only looking for updates kind of from trusted sources like this podcast, like their pastors, like other. And I'm like, wow, that's maybe a stretch because we definitely don't know what we're talking about all the time. But I actually like the, it's a little extreme maybe, but I'm like, I actually like the fact that you're just going to trusted sources and voices on that. That's that's probably wise. You're taking a lot of anxiety out of your own system in that way. That's good.
Yeah, I'm interested to know your thoughts on what opportunities will this create for us, either pastorally or missiologically? You know, so if you think about, hey, what? Granted, this is creating some chaos and some uncertainty, but what good things is the Lord doing in the midst of this to either stir up in people's souls or to give us new eyes for in the world around us? You know.
I think it gives us an opportunity to actually take Jesus' words seriously in Matthew 6, where he says, don't be anxious, don't be worried about tomorrow. Don't worry about tomorrow. Rather than thinking that's just an idea that Jesus said to follow, but it's actually tangible. And just a page later, Jesus says, anyone who listens to my words is like a man who builds his house up on a rock. And the Psalms talk about how the Lord is our rock over and over and over again. And so I think Christians have a unique opportunity to have a steadfast presence with family members and with their neighbors, even in their church, to people who are anxious in their church and fearful in the church, of saying, no, this is what it looks like to actually trust Jesus's words, that he's actually going to provide for us today, our daily bread today, and then tomorrow he will provide for us what we need tomorrow. Because everything else around us is saying the complete opposite. Hoard what you need today so that you don't have any need tomorrow.
Especially toilet paper.
Especially toilet paper.
And
toilet
bottled paper. Water.
And cleaning supplies and all those things.
I think, you know, going back to the snow day analogy, which if this week is the snow day and then the next couple of weeks, I think we have a couple of unique opportunities. First, I'll just speak to our church or to Christians and say, I'm not sure that we're ready for the relational and the emotional things that are demanded of us when we are having to be forced to be hunkered down at home.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is, I think especially in America, we are so busy and we're so, and by busy, let me define busy. What I mean by busy is just scattered. We're just hustling
distracted.
Around. Distracted. I can, let me put it this way. If home is a place of either animosity or strife, I can go to work. And now that is the country, the world is shutting down, right? So like now you've had to set up a home office and now you're going to have some relational and emotional implications. I don't know that the capacity, the maturity is there that we need to have. And so I do think, to answer your question about, I do think the Lord probably wants to drop in a bunch of that. I think we're going to have ministry opportunities to help people become emotionally and relationally more sound. And that will present itself. It's just going to present itself because it's going to be acute here in a couple of weeks, I think. Or maybe it won't be in a couple of weeks. Maybe it'll be at the end of this thing in the summer, what Chris is talking about, and then we'll see it there. Or we might get ourselves to the summer and see a bunch of addictive behaviors where all of a sudden people don't know how to cope, and so they're like looking to vices and they're looking to things to try to numb this anxiety or this pain. I think we have an opportunity here probably to see a bunch of idols surfaced. I mean, sports has shut down. besides Tom Brady, of course, Chris.
Yeah, besides. Tom Brady will live forever.
Tom Brady's fine. He's going to start his own league or something. But I just think when the world starts shutting down all my idolatry and I'm forced to be at home with the people that I should be at home with, that I think I love, and there's strife. I just think it's going to get interesting. So I think there's pastoral situation stuff there. I do think as a church, though, we we have the opportunity here to create and teach a lot more about kingdom. If we worship King Jesus, then we're less nervous about the things that are happening on earth. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think we have a kingdom opportunity here. And I don't know, I've been asking the question like, man, could this be revival? Like, is there a way here for the Lord, if we're praying towards revival at some point in our lifetime, could this be the way that even non-Christians look at the Christians and go, man, they're really taking care of each other well. They're asking me if I need anything. I'm a little freaked out. They're not freaked out. What's going on here? I think we have an opportunity.
I've been meditating on Philippians 4 and thinking about some messages that I'm looking to share with First City. And there's some interesting categories that the Apostle Paul uses. I mean, this is the chapter we have, the rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. But right after that, there's this line where he says, let your reasonableness be known to all. And so that's where I think those two categories, one, and kind of to go off what you were saying, Mike, of just what it looks like to model faith in Christ in this time and to be a people who can actually rejoice in the midst of this because of our faith and see the opportunity to grow in that and to the way people experience us. I know, again, social distancing, right? But just when they do encounter us, that there's not a fear, but there's actually a joy in the Lord. But then also to model reasonableness, to be the most level-headed in the midst of all this because of our faith. I mean, what a missiological opportunity there.
Yeah, that's good.
And then, you know, you get later in that chapter, you know, the famous, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But what comes right before that is Paul saying, I've learned what it means to be content when I have a lot and content when I don't have a lot. And so what would it look like for the church to really embody that and live that out of no matter what the next weeks and months bring, we're able to learn contentment and being able to, with joy, enter into the changing dynamic. So that's the burden I have for First City and wanting to communicate and disciple in that direction. But I think as the church overall, I think Philippians 4 has a lot to say about an opportunity we have in this time.
I've been trying to encourage people toward practices of solitude for years now. Chris, I took you and Mindy on a day of solitude with me to the monastery time.
It stuck.
I think it's, and people, when I coach them or try to challenge them in this, you know, the question is always, what's the hardest part of entering into solitude? Well, the hardest part is being alone with yourself.
Yeah.
The hardest part is the fact that you actually have to face the things in you that you can numb or avoid as long as you're either distracted or busy or, you know, frantic and hurried. And so I think that's kind of what I'm seeing and seeing people facing in this moment is like, yep, when they take away your work, your kids' school, all your activities, even the restaurants you go to and the bars you hang out at and the coffee shops. And when it's just like life is real simple for a few weeks, I think that's the hardest thing. Like you got to be alone with yourself.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing. There's one thing for Christians in a platitudinous way to say like, yeah, you know, it's great. We love the Lord and you know, we want to follow King Jesus. But like when I actually have to sort of sit alone with myself long enough to go like, actually, man, there's things in my soul that are unsettled. Mm-hmm. There's anger. There's frustration with my kids or with my family. There's longing for idols or numbing effects or comforts that I can't have right now. There's either a choice to enter into that or a choice to avoid all of that. And I think that's, I wonder if some of the anxiety that Christians are feeling right now is just that. It's not about like what's going to happen with the coronavirus. It's more about like, man, what do I do with the fact that I'm kind of face to face with me right now? And I'm not sure I love everything that I'm face to face with. And I just want to encourage listeners, if that's the place you are, hey, move into that because there's actually, it's really fruitful to get to that spot.
Yep.
It does feel scary a little bit and unsettling. But I think there's really powerful opportunity for renewal and awakening and revival and going deeper places with God on the other side of that. Totally on a different note than the pastoral side of it, it's interesting. Maybe this isn't even missiological. It's more philosophy of ministry related. It's been interesting to me to think about the whole question of like virtual church, live streaming. What do we do with all of that? It's really interesting that like, I feel I told our team on Monday, we were in a room sort of sorting out, hey, what do we do for the next few weeks? It looks like we're not going to be able to meet for a while, you know, so what do we do? And as we were having this, I was like, I don't like getting backed into a corner by pragmatics that we haven't thought about yet theologically. Mm-hmm. And it sort of felt like the default setting is like, well, live stream your services. And we had people asking, like, when, was Cormdale going to live stream their services? And I was like, I don't know, because I don't know if we do that. Like, I don't want to just do that because that's what people are doing. I'm like, do we do that? Is that how we think about things? And I have some ambivalence there at the very least. So you guys sound like you're doing it. So how did we do that?
Yeah, he's Marco Polo guy.
We're gonna do our whole Marco Polo. That's what it's gonna be. A Marco Polo worship service.
To pro for that, probably.
Oh, man, that sounds like the worst thing ever. Oh man,
people can add their own filters.
Oh wow.
Sorry, Chris.
I'm getting shivers just thinking about that.
Totally messed your line of thought up.
No, but. So we're still working out some of the details, but we're going to use live stream in a limited way. We're gonna, you know, as a lot of churches, they're probably gonna say, hey, let's try this Sunday and see how it works, and if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. But this is a little bit of preview. I haven't even sent this out to our people yet. But,
ooh, you're here to hear first, everyone.
You're gonna hear it first. So First City folks, hey, here's what we're gonna try to do this Sunday, is. We're gonna live stream a portion. So essentially the beginning, what would be the kind of the beginning of our time, which is gonna be me giving the message first. And the philosophy behind that was, hey, how can we create some sense of our people doing something together, even though they're in their individual homes, but they're rallying around something, gathering around something together at the same time. But then after that, give a lot of direction for kind of a family worship time after that message, so kind of building off the message. So we're not going to live stream the music. We're not going to live stream the whole thing. It's just going to be kind of the message that then gets people hopefully into a time of family worship. So that's what we're thinking now.
Can I like type in on your live stream? Like, hey, Chris, that was a good point. Is it like live? Like people can comment on it?
Flame emoji.
Yes, lots of fire. These are the things I don't know. I don't have Facebook. All I'm going to be doing is giving a message in front of a camera. I have no idea what's going to be happening.
Oh, I'm putting flame emojis on there all morning long. There you go. On there, just flame emojiing Chris.
We're
at that point in the podcast where I even wonder if Chris has the internet.
What's this?
What are these emojis?
www. My AOL account. Can I get that on my AOL account?
Napster. You can get it through Napster.
Well, so you're doing something real similar to what we're doing. I'm just not going to preach live. We're going to record a sermon, but same idea. Is just like the sermon will be the content that we put out, but asking people, we're just building liturgy around that and trying to resource people to say, hey, either with your family or with a few friends or with your roommates, you know, you can read scripture and sing songs and pray and confess your sin. And it's actually more fun to do that in a room of people than on a screen with a person trying to do it for you. And, but it's really interesting because I think this is one of those questions that the church actually is going to have to answer on the backside of mm-hmm. this, you know, it's just like, to what, and this is it's a live question for me, to what extent is a mediated service, a true expression of the body of Christ? And to what extent is it not?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if like, if you're a church leader listening to this, that's the question I think you got to wrestle with is granted that, you know, in a moment of sort of crisis like this, you got to come up with whatever solutions you sort of can in the interim. But the broader theological question is, what does it mean to gather together with the body of Christ? And can you do that on a live stream?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this might be a little bit of a tangent, but I've been reading some church history on how the church has responded to different plagues. And if you look at the story of Calvin in Geneva, there were multiple ministers that they so believed that it was important that a minister be bodily present.
Yeah.
That they had guys that would go in and serve plague hospitals, which is basically a death sentence.
Yeah.
And they had multiple guys die. At one point, Calvin was going to do it, but they thought, no, you're too important to the entire movement. And so, no, you're not going to do it. But the church in the past so believed in an unmediated ministry that guys were willing to just say, I'm going to die doing this. So I'm not saying that, you know, pastors, we have to go do this, but it's to your point, Bob, like, an unmediated worship, an unmediated ministry has just that's just such a foreign category that we are going to have to wrestle through kind of the theological implications of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you know, the church in China is a good test case of that, right? Like this is how they've been gathering for a long time. And so we're getting a little taste of their medicine and they keep their groups certain size, you know, they keep them as small as they can so they don't get found out. And But my point is they're doing something to get together. And the importance of the gathering is important.
It is interesting to think about it globally and to think about, is the idea of a live-streamed worship service a uniquely American privilege because we have the technology, the capacity, and the resources to do it? You know, whereas like, that might not be the case everywhere.
And church in your pajamas. Church in your pajamas isn't church. It's watching a service.
Right, it's watching a service on a screen.
You need to get to church.
Yeah.
when that thing reopens.
Well, it's really fun to have our church, you know, built around gospel communities and to realize actually we have a structure for this. You know, like we can kind of go real house church style again once the hardcore restrictions are lifted and we're back to you can gather with a few dozen people, you know. That actually works really well for how our church is built because of how we structured it, which I'm grateful for in a moment like this. You really realize you do miss the Sunday gathering. There are reasons it can't be replaced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's also a sense of like, oh, but man, when you can default to some rich and relationally dense small groups, that's a really beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. It's been really interesting to even describe to my kids why we're not going to church or why we didn't have church. It's only been 1 week.
Yeah.
And they're like, why not? You know, like, I don't get it, you know, like this is what we do. And
my kids are bummed.
Yeah. And I think a couple weeks down the road, we're going to have we think about opportunities. One of the opportunities we might have is to just build a deeper ecclesiology in the long.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And I actually think that's one of the pastoral benefits of this is it sort of does make us double down on what are the practices that really matter, you know? Man, we have some things that are luxuries that are nice to have, you know, but then there's things we need to have. What we need is the Word of God, prayer, the body of Christ. Like there's certain things we need. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, we recognize the value of those things and how sort of extraneous other things really become. And so, man, my hope is that this brings renewal in our church by sort of dialing us back to like, oh yeah, this is what really matters. And here's what we really care about. And there's something beautiful about just being with God's people each week, hearing the word preached each week, receiving the sacrament together each week. And these are beautiful things. And, you know, we have to forego that for a season of time. And so let's not grieve that too much. But I think it does create a sense of anticipation of like, man, when can we get back together?
Yeah.
Let's make this happen. Well, hey, listeners, hope you're hanging in there and realize this is a unique moment. And so, hey, hang in there and reach out to your pastor, whether that's us, whether you're part of our church or some other local church. Don't let this be a season where you isolate and where you get yourself in places that are either spiritually, emotionally, relationally unhealthy. Make sure that you're caring for the people around you and reaching out to your local church community for whatever you might need. This is a time when we really need to be the church for one another, even in the limited ways that we can do that. So let's love one another well in this season. Thanks for listening. We'll keep bringing content, podcasts your way every Wednesday for as long as this crisis goes on. And in the absence of church on Sunday, I hope that provides just a touch point for you during the middle of the week and some things to keep you encouraged in the Lord. Thanks for listening.